This is the morning brief from the Economic Times.
Here are the average costs incurred by a COVID-19 infected person who needed hospitalization. An RT-PCR test from a private hospital is rupees 1000. An isolation bed in a hospital costs anywhere between rupees 8000 to rupees 11000 a day. If a patient needs critical care, an ICU bed with a ventilator is around rupees 15000 to rupees 18000 a day. And remember, most people had to be hospitalized for at least 3 to 10 days, and the rates differed with different states. The cost for disposables like gloves and PPE kits are extra. And don't forget the cost of medicines. Patients were prescribed a cocktail of medicines like remdesivir, favipiravir and tocilizumab that cost anywhere from rupees 800 to rupees 20,000 per person. And that too if it was purchased from an authorized chemist and not from the black market. And these aren't covered by most insurance plans. And we haven't even talked about the cost of procuring life-saving oxygen cylinders and other costs people incurred for home isolation and care. ...23-year-old Soundarya, who used to work with a renowned private hospital in Chennai, came home one day with a fever. And a day later, her entire family were tested positive with COVID-19. She went through unimaginable financial and mental distress.
Having my job bygone in one hand, my beloved family collapsing unconscious out of oxygen in the other, that was a terrifying night of my life. With myself not having completely recovered from the illness, seeking help from my friends, I got them admitted in a private hospital nearby. With a given package of 2 lakhs per head, I was sleepless thinking from nowhere to get 6 plus lakhs, which is 35,000 per day. With my pounding heart and few hopes left, all the family savings of 2 lakhs rupees was paid for the first week. Also, I was asked to buy my father 6 doses of remdesivir. Along the side of everything, I raised funds of rupees 2.25 lakhs in a crowdfunding site with help and support from anonymous donors.
Fortunately, Soundarya's father is doing well today. But she is yet to find a job to earn what she lost trying to save her family. I'm Bhavya Dilip Kumar and you're listening to The Morning Brief. In today's episode, we will be discussing the cost of COVID on those of us who are forced to choose between affordability and survival. We will look at the economic fallout of the crisis and the average spends on medicines. We will also analyze what went wrong with our drug policies and try and find out what needs to be done to brace ourselves to face the possibility of a third wave. To understand the ground realities, I spoke to Malini Aishola, co-convener of All India Drug Action Network. She is also actively engaged in advocating dignified and affordable healthcare. Malini, the popular antiviral drug remdesivir was available at around rupees 2,500 to rupees 4,000 last year. But at the peak of the second wave, it was sold in the black market for a whopping rupees 40,000 to rupees 50,000 for just 2 vials due to short supply, of course. Medicines weren't the only thing that were sold at such exorbitant prices. Can you narrate to us some instances where people had to choose between affordability and survival?
In one of the cases where I was trying to help someone get access to oxygen cylinders for both of her aged parents who needed to get oxygen support at home. And this was because, of course, there were no beds available in Delhi at that time. And she reported back to me after speaking to some suppliers and, who might have had oxygen cylinders to give her. At one point, she said that, she had turned down one of the very expensive quotes because she needed to budget and save up to pay for favipiravir, which is a drug for her parents. So the point I would like to make is that not only were the, you know, of course, as you mentioned, the fundraising requests at this time were completely unprecedented through online platforms, but many families were also actually having to deal with competing exorbitant costs. So they were trying to figure out how to make payments, not just for, you know, one commodity, but for medicines, for oxygen, for treatment costs, all at the same time.
The hospital bills were running into lakhs and medical insurance was not covering the drug costs. People had to do whatever they could to raise money. I spoke to Kiran Somvanshi, data journalist at The Economic Times, who reports on pharma, healthcare and corporate governance, to find out more about how people exactly managed to get the funds and how they coped.
First of all, medical insurance penetration itself is an issue in India. Like, how many of us are insured? The organized sector is insured, but there is a huge unorganized part of it who are not separately insured. Like, maximum we would have is group insurance from an office, provided I'm working in an office which is in an organized sector. And will I be separately taking a medical insurance? Unlikely, given that my savings or my financial literacy wouldn't probably have developed at a level where I would go for an insurance. In that also, there are exemptions. So there are exclusions. So COVID drugs or anything which is not the regular part of the treatment will not be covered in the policy. So invariably, even post COVID recuperation, those medications will not be covered. So given all that, since invariably become out of pocket expenses in India. But besides that, there is another problem of that while the pandemic hit, so one was the medical cost and other was the economic cost of survival. So while I'm struggling to survive, if I am a daily wage laborer and I'm not having job because of lockdown, and if in that circumstances, if I have a patient at home who suffered from COVID, then it's like double whammy. And then that's why that pushes people to either go for lending, take loans, personal loans at high interest rates, or these days crowdfunding or crowdsourcing the cost. But again, there are success stories, but not all of them are digitally penetrated or savvy enough to kind of seek a crowdfunder or a crowdsourcer for them. Like Ayushman Bharat came out as a medical insurance scheme in India and you know, it rolled out with a lot of fanfare, but it has not had this kind of desired success which it should have in attending to a pandemic.
गंभीर बीमारियों के लिए और बड़ी अस्पतालों में सामान्य मानवी को भी आरोग्य की सुविधा मिले, मुफ्त में मिले, और इसलिए भारत सरकार ने प्रधानमंत्री जन आरोग्य अभियान प्रारंभ करने का तय किया।
So 2 years before the pandemic, we had this whole Ayushman Bharat coming in, and it was supposed to be a very good scheme, taking care of the poor, and insurance was a way out for them, 5 lakh insurance, taking care of their hospitalization. But somehow, if you look at the COVID numbers, there is a lot of skew in terms of how states have performed or how states have benefited. So you have some states like Punjab, or Gujarat or Bihar, there are hardly any patients. There is almost zero patients which have benefited under the scheme. And there are some states in South which have had lakhs of patients getting treatment under Ayushman Bharat.
So it's clear that people spent a lot of money on life-saving drugs that were largely experimental and unproven. I spoke to Dr. S.P. Kalantri, who's the professor of medicine at the Mahatma Gandhi Institute of Medical Sciences, and he's also the medical superintendent of Kasturba College in Sevagram, Maharashtra. I just wanted to understand whether these were prescribed by the medical professionals or was it majorly panic buying?
Unfortunately, all these prescriptions, and they come from across the entire spectrum of medical community. They would come from rural doctors, urban doctors, from medical colleges, from private nursing homes, from tertiary care hospitals. Often some of these hospitals had a standard treatment form which was printed and was given to the patient. When favipiravir was launched in our country, a full course of favipiravir would cost as much as 13,500 rupees for a patient. So the problem is that these irrational therapies itself created a financial toxicity. And I strongly believe that at least in mild COVID, you need no more than a couple of tablets of paracetamol to get cured. But instead, the patients kept on getting tons and tons of drugs. And that led to an additional pressure on the family, additional financial toxicity.
During the second wave, we also saw the government flip-flopping on guidelines in terms of treatments and medicines. The guidelines differed majorly from the Directorate General of Health Services, the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, and the Indian Council of Medical Research, or ICMR. To add to the misery, every state came up with its own policy and control of some of the emergency drugs. This indeed created a lot of confusion among the medical fraternity. What could have been done to regulate this? Let's find out.
As a physician, I strongly believe that all scientific reasoning cannot be abandoned citing desperate times. Now, this is a favorite alibi which the medical professionals and media and even public takes that, well, these are desperate times, and in desperate times, we need to have desperate solutions. They might be irrational, they might be unscientific, they might be unproven, but, well, if we have nothing to lay our hands on, then probably we should look at a magic bullet, and there's no harm in prescribing these drugs. I strongly disagree with this stand and believe that the ineffective cures can be long-lasting. Otherwise, how do you explain the popularity of such drugs as ivermectin, azithromycin, convalescent plasma, doxycycline, favipiravir, hydroxychloroquine, itolizumab, interferon alpha, and more recently 2DG for managing COVID? And none of these drugs have stood the test of time. None of these drugs have proven benefits in large randomized controlled trials, and none of them is backed by science. So instead, their widespread use in patients of COVID, mild, moderate, or severe, outside the hospital, in the wards, in the ICUs, led to a tremendous financial toxicity there. The national policymakers need to publish a guideline which is nationally applicable, which is evidence-based, and which is science-driven. And such guidelines have been published by World Health Organization, by National Institute of Health, by NICE, and several other neighboring countries as well.
Black marketing of everything from medicines to portable oxygen machines to even essential drugs like remdesivir was rampant during the second wave. Malini, did the government take any steps at all here?
So I would say that the black marketing and excessive pricing that we saw was really primarily a result of the lack of planning by the government and a failure to take a public health approach. Given that we already had the experience of the first wave, one can only term this as a very callous approach of the governments. Of course, both the central government and many of the state governments are implicated in this. Some steps that were taken, which were more in the form of enforcement and punitive measures to clamp down on the black marketeers, were done. And also, there was an attempt to control the supply of some of the essential goods. However, when this is being done at the time of crisis, these were sometimes even counterproductive because access, of course, is paramount when people are in dire need of these essential commodities. And therefore, the measures that were meant to curb the prices were also sometimes endangering the actual access to these supplies. And we saw this quite clearly in Delhi in respect of access to oxygen cylinders, which were needed for many people who were stranded in their houses because there were no beds in which they could be admitted.
So what role did hospitals play here? We have plenty of anecdotal evidence to suggest that despite regulations from the government on capping prices for treatment, private hospitals continued to charge exorbitant rates.
One of the key reasons is very weak enforcement. Because also of the desperate state of affairs when hospital beds were in really short supply, hospitals were able to take undue advantage of that situation. And state governments, many of them, were reluctant to actually enforce those orders. And in those kind of very desperate situations, the public also did not really have a choice about approaching private hospitals, because the government hospitals were full and also often lacking the facilities, equipment, manpower to be able to treat patients sufficiently. So people who would otherwise not be able to afford these prices had no choice but to go to private healthcare. Now, one of the results, obviously, is that families did not really get the full benefit of these orders and had to pay huge out-of-pocket expenses. And to complicate matters, if the family did have some sort of an insurance coverage, the insurance companies were often refusing to reimburse the high and unreasonable costs of private hospitals.
After battling COVID-19, there is now a fight for COVID insurance. There are COVID patients whose insurance claims are being denied by insurance agencies.
Many are struggling to pay their hospital bills and claim that insurance companies have left them in a lurch.
They have to pay for what their costs were by up to 50%.
So Malini, what can an individual and families do when they are overcharged by the hospitals?
So families and patients can speak out. But what we must realize is that there are many barriers to that happening. The first is a lack of information regarding any sorts of regulations that may be in place. So people may not be aware when they go to a hospital for admission that there is actually an order that provides for government rates. And therefore, they may not know how to avail of that. And then also there is a lack of awareness regarding a patient's rights in relation to, private hospitals. Having the right of getting access to medical records in a timely manner, not being held hostage or a body being detained due to the non-payment or non-clearance of the bill, and so forth. Secondly, there is also a very deep power imbalance at play. And given a lack of any grievance mechanism in place in respect of government rate caps, families are unable to often raise complaints or to get assistance against violations and overcharging by hospitals. So most lack the ability or the resources to then pursue a legal battle, especially if they are facing a continued illness of the family member or they have been confronted recently with the death of a loved one. So I would say that the government actually has a bigger role to play in ensuring that the regulations are widely advertised, in proactively monitoring and enforcing them, and also in providing avenues for grievance redressal.
It is too early to put your guard down. Health experts believe that the third wave is going to hit India probably by October this year.
AIIMS Chief Dr. Randeep Guleria has warned that there could be a third wave in the next 6 to 8 weeks if citizens are not careful.
Third wave of coronavirus is inevitable in India and may hit the country in the next 6 to 8 weeks.
A third wave is uncertain, but preparing for it is the only choice we have. What are the issues that India must address in terms of bringing the cost down through a holistic approach, and what should be the priority for now?
We had plenty of opportunity to wake up in the first wave, but unfortunately, we didn't wake up in the first wave. And we also realized that although India makes a huge amount of oxygen for its heavy industries, where it is stored, it is used, and it can be used for medical care, but we lack that mechanism to distribute this oxygen. So in April and May, almost all major hospitals in the country, they became acutely hypoxic, and they were not supplied with enough oxygen. So the government did ask the gas companies to divert oxygen from their industrial clients to the hospital. The government did import some small amount of oxygen, but this all amounted to firefighting. So if the next wave comes, and we are trying to predict the unpredictable, nobody really knows when the third wave would come. But one thing that we very badly need is that this time the country should have enough resources, enough infrastructure, enough policy mechanisms in place to ensure that the oxygen is really available in every hospital where the patients of COVID are getting admitted, that all our ventilators have a proper supply of oxygen. I was extremely happy and very pleasantly surprised to see the DCGI guidelines about a fortnight ago, and that 9-page PDF brought so much pleasure to my heart, because that document is very clear, it's very concise, and it is pure science-driven. The document says that all that you need to treat COVID patients are only 4 drugs, and they would be paracetamol for mildly ill, those who are hypoxic get a steroid, those who are hypoxic and are deteriorating and need an ICU admission get a tocilizumab, and those who are hospitalized and have got comorbid illnesses like sugar problems or BP or cancer or chronic lung disease, they also get a blood thinner. Full stop, period. Which means that the entire country can be managed with only 4 drugs, paracetamol, a steroid, a tocilizumab in very select few, and blood thinners again in a small chunk of a population. Rest, everything is stupidity. So if, should the third wave arrive, and if we have a common national protocol driven by the highest scientific bodies of the country, and we make sure that those protocols travel to the length and breadth of the country and are religiously followed by all hospitals, whether they are public and or private, and the private hospitals do not indulge in profiteering, then maybe we can greatly simplify the very process of treating COVID patients. We would be able to dramatically reduce the cost of healthcare, and we would ensure that the rich are not overtreated and the poor are not undertreated.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kalantri, Malini and Kiran. COVID-19 has pushed many into a financial crisis. As we prepare for the uncertain future, it's high time that the government's policies and guidelines are more measured and evidence-based, which could actually help fix the exorbitant cost of COVID treatments. Authorities have a lot to do in terms of cracking down on the black marketeering and overcharging. Setting up strong avenues for grievance redressal for individuals to come forward and complain about any fraudulent practices in relation to COVID will offer a safety net to patients. It remains to be seen how the government can help in regulating drug companies who have a monopoly. That's all from us today. I'm Bhavya Dilipkumar, and you've been listening to The Morning Brief. This episode was edited and coordinated by Nehal Chaliawala. I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. We look forward to your feedback. Write to us at themorningbrief@timesgroup.com. And if you like this episode, please share on your social media handles. We'd really appreciate it. The Morning Brief airs every Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Thank you for listening. Have a great day and stay safe. All external sound clips used in this episode belong to their respective owners. Credit mentioned in the description.